This is an interview with Stella Hollander, conducted by Ruth Munro on Friday the 6th of October 2017 at the State Library of South Australia. The interview is being conducted as part of the Women's Information Service History Project. Also present at the interview is Liz Ahern, who is operating the recording equipment. In the interview, the Women's Information Service and its earlier name of Women's Information Switchboard will be referred to by the acronym WIS. Now, I'll begin the interview by asking for some personal information. Could you give me your name and a brief overview of when and where you were born and grew up?
My name is Stella Hollander. I was born as Stella Kurtidis in a little village in the northern part of Greece called Macedonia, in Greek Macedonia. And I lived there until I was 16, when I emigrated with my parents and my two brothers to Australia in December 1965.
Right, and I understand that you began at the Women's Switchboard as a volunteer. When did you start working as a volunteer, and where was WIS located then?
I started in 1989. It was requested by the then worker, Sophie Alexiou, or Sophie Rose, as she's known now. She asked me, she was impressed with my Greek language skills. At the time, I was an interpreter and translator. I had studied at the SACE, South Australian College of Advanced Education, and I had a Bachelor of Arts in Interpreting and Translating Greek and English. And she asked me to volunteer to do the radio program, which I did for 12 months.
And can you tell us more about the radio program? Was it conducted in any other language?
My understanding is that at the time it was also conducted in Italian.
And how often did you have a radio program, and how long was each program?
Okay, it was a half-hour radio program at 5EBI FM, which was the multilingual radio station in Byron Place in the city. And I was to prepare the program during my time, my working. When I was a volunteer, I prepared the program and presented it for that half hour every Friday afternoon at 3:30, between 3:30 and 4, and it was to be an informative program, broken up with a bit of music to break up the talk.
So was it actual talk back radio? Did the women get the chance to ask questions?
It wasn't talk back at the time. I don't think there was a facility, but people were able to ring and leave telephone numbers or leave questions. And then when I subsequently worked as an information officer at WIS in 1990, I was able to call them back and clarify questions or seek from them topics they would like me to conduct the program in.
Right. Was it mostly on health issues, or was it a general?
When I started, it was basically health issues. The programs were prepared between WIS and Women's Health, and the focus was on health issues. But what I found as time went that there were basically translated information that we used to read out, and very often women weren't really clear what we were talking about. So as time went, I started changing them and tried to make them more like radio talk.
In
more plain language, yes. And less dense, and also chose topics from responses or from queries that women used to ring WIS about. But this happened more when I started working there as an information officer. And I was employed as the Greek worker, therefore I had a lot of Greek women ringing.
Right, yes.
And then I had a better grasp of the topics they had queries about.
And how important was the radio program to the Greek women? And what type of women listened? Were they all ages or newly arrived migrants or any specific types of listeners?
At the time, there were hardly any new arrivals because we're talking about the 90s. Mm. The majority of them came in the 50s, 60s and some in up to mid-70s. But it was the elderly women, isolated women, women who sometimes were in domestic violence, in family violence, in controlling situations. So it was a very important outlet for them, mm-hmm. as they described to me, obviously. And it's from their responses, their calls.
Yes, it would have been very important to them. And who was the manager of WIS at that time?
When I started, so then I went, about when I started working there.
Okay.
The manager when I worked there was Linda Matthews.
Right, and so after you'd been a volunteer, you became a member of the paid staff. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us how this came about, that you were on the paid staff?
Sophie Alexiou, Sophie Rose, got seconded elsewhere and the position became vacant. They were only able to publicise it within the public service. I wasn't a public servant, I was a freelance interpreter, translator. So the person that got the position decided that she wasn't able to do the radio program. So Linda Matthews invited me in to ask me to do the radio program, not on a volunteer basis, which was more ad hoc, but to actually be responsible to prepare and produce the program with pay. And I did. And then very shortly afterwards, the paid worker decided to leave. And having met me, Linda Matthews really wanted me to do the job. So she found a way to employ me for a very short period of time, which was then extended and extended and extended. And I ended up being at WIS for 6.5 years
as a
paid staff.
Right. And what was your position there, the job title?
Information officer. I think we're called information and support officer, but that's what we did.
Right. And what can you tell me about the work you did in this position, your responsibilities and duties of that position?
Well, it was basically to provide information and support to women who called in and supervise the volunteers and assist whenever they needed. Other things that we did is from the work that we conducted, we were able to recommend training on various things, like if we had too many suicide calls, all the information officers would recommend maybe we should get some training for our volunteers about suicide or about isolation and child abuse. We even, I remember clearly actually, we had a young girl of Greek background who was sexually abused by a family member, and she used to come and seek support from us and felt an affinity because I was of Greek background, that I would understand her better, you know. So
yeah, that would be very important to someone like that. Yes
it was. Yes.
And what did you like about working at WIS?
The thing that I liked most about was that I learned so much. I learned so much. 6.5 years of one of the best schools of my life. Because as much as we gave out information and support, in order to do that, we had to learn the information. And in those days, we had a very passionate motto that said, no woman will call in here and we will just say we don't know. We will find out what she needs and we will, if we need to refer her, we will make absolutely sure that is the most appropriate and accurate referral.
Right. And who was the manager during that time after Linda Matthews?
After Linda Matthews, I only worked with Gudrun Bessler, the late Gudrun Bessler. I was very fond of Gudrun. Not many people were, but I was. I was very, very fond of her. She was a very fair person, right. I thought. Anyway.
Right. And a little bit about the ethos and culture of WIS. Can you tell us what WIS was like when you were working there? What were its aims and objectives, and how did it operate? You've already said a little bit about making sure that every question was answered, but yes. Is there anything more that you can add to that?
The majority of the time, particularly the former years that I worked there, I felt that the women that worked there, both as paid staff and volunteers, were very passionate about assisting women becoming empowered. So it was, as I remember it, and I don't know whether it was because I was naive, because I was quite naive, hence I learnt a lot. But the people that I worked with then, like Gudrun Besler, like Lisa Hearn, Tanya Hosh, Sarah Marshall, these are the names that I remember more prominently. And some of the volunteers, particularly the older women, they had a lot of wisdom that they shared with us. And sometimes if there was a bit of conflict, some of them were so gracious, they would write a letter to apologize to the other, to the member. It was just, or a card. And that's my former year. So we were very united, very strong bonds between the workers that I felt. Towards the end of it, it kind of didn't go as well. We had someone come from overseas to be the manager, and it just, and some of the workers there were a bit, I don't know if their idea of what we should be was different, but things didn't work as well.
Right. And now you've said a little bit about some of the people you worked with. Do you have any other memories of the times you shared with the volunteers and workers?
Well, one of the things that we, I remember, one of the things that we used to love about Louisa Sheehan, the Italian worker, when someone used to, because it was a walk-in as well, it wasn't just on the phone. We were in the Mortlock Library in Kintore Avenue. So we were on this, from Kintore Avenue, that side street, part of the library. I can't remember what it was called, but it was part of the Mortlock Library. It was just one big room and then another big room at the back, which was our meeting room. And I vividly remember Louisa Sheehan, as soon as she saw someone walk in, she would leap off her seat and strut to the door, because she was a tall, elegant lady. And I used to imitate her and the other workers, and we used to have a laugh. And so that's a vivid memory. The other thing that I recall that I found very interesting is we used to do a lot of talks. Informative talks to schools and women's group, and we even used to do an outreach program, go out to the regional areas like Port Pirie and where else did we go? A number of places anyway. And then an idea came up to go to Mala and Minterby up in the north. But we had to fly there, and they all recommended that I go. And I said, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to fly on a little plane. But they encouraged me to do it, and I did. And it was one of the most wonderful experiences to go up there to the service towns of Minterby and in Mala area,
yes,
it region.
Would have been very interesting and very.
I will never be able to do that trip again, so
yes,
I was lucky.
Yes, and were you well received there?
Yes, well, look, we went along with a range of other places, workers from other areas such as domestic violence, from up in North Adelaide, it has a special name, but it was about women, and the police officer also came along, and I think there was a legal person. So we gave a holistic information to the women there, so, and the people there. So,
Very interesting, yes. And Wiz has seen many changes over the years. Were you? What were some of the changes that were introduced when you worked there, or have you covered that?
The major one that I remember, because we are talking about quite some time ago now, I worked there from 1990 until mid-96. During that period, there was a review of WIS, and there were lots of ideas of change. A lot of people didn't take it well. But I always embrace change because this change is good because it makes you to rethink. And if it's done well, you take with you the good stuff and let go of the stuff that needs to be changed. Other changes that I recall, and I may not have a very clear memory of them, but the system that we used was changed. It became computerized, and that's when we... Tanya Hosh and Sarah Marshall, two young women, and me, the older woman, we got together to prepare a new program to train the volunteers. The majority of our volunteers embraced that. Some were a bit difficult to embrace it, but we were able to help them turn around and accept the computerized system. Yes.
So, well, before the computer and the internet, how did you go about getting the information you needed to respond to the women's queries?
We had books. I can't remember what they were called. They were made by some office. Kissa. That's it. Kissa produced some books that had information, and we used those. If there were any alterations, we used to hand do those. But we used to keep records as well.
So you could look back on past questions and...
Or we could collate and work out where we need to renew information. Yes, so we had a very successful program and it went really well. Yes.
And was the internet actually introduced while you were still there? It was.
And if very, so, very primary, very archaic. But I remember we had an email address. One.
Very different from now.
Yes.
Yeah. So how did that change things? How did you already said how it impacted on the workers and volunteers and. But how did you help WIS, how did WIS help women to learn this new technology? Was the Women's Internet Access Program available then?
That was much, much later.
Yeah. All right. Talk a bit about the clients. What do you remember about the clients who used WIS? For example, their age or ethnic background, and what involvement did you have with these women?
I can't really say about their ethnic background because we didn't check on that. People just rang or walked in. Obviously, I was there for the Greek women. One of the things that I did quite a lot when I started with the Greek women is make applications to the housing trust. They would make an application for a home in the housing trust. Mm-hmm. If they were from low income or single or separated women. And WIS used to write a letter of support. So that was a very successful thing, to the point where just a couple of years ago I bumped into one of the women that I assisted, and she says that she will always remember me because I helped her with the letter. So obviously it was something that was important, not just for the women, but for the services, for Housing Trust to pay enough attention to assist the women more promptly to access a Housing Trust home. So the women that called us, my memory is about mainly women being in need, and particularly women from domestic violence. I guess it's understandable that people will not wake up one morning and say, I think I'm going to call Women's Information on Switchboard or Service, as you subsequently changed to that name, because I would like to know a bit of information about this or that. Most people reach out for information when they need it. So we got women who were in need. It would be because they were in domestic violence and they would ring us. One of my vivid memories is that very often or a substantial percentage of them wanted to talk about it. And the thing that surprised me and subsequently helped me in my own life is to let go quicker of these things, because we would get women ring us and say, my ex-husband does this to me and does that. This is after they've separated. And as they were talking, you got the impression that they had just separated. And then when you asked, how long have you been separated? And they would say, 10 years. And I would be in shock thinking, oh my God, you need to move on. So we learned at WIS to assist them to become empowered. That was very important for WIS, to help women move on and not to be there for them as their crutch or as their as a shoulder they leant onto and kept coming back. So that was very clear in my mind quite earlier on in the piece. And I took a lot of, I felt really rewarded to assist women to do that. At the same time, we would listen. Just listen to them. You know, active listening. Listen to comfort, and active listening, often they would ring without knowing exactly what, without being able to articulate what they needed. And active listening is about helping them work out what is it that they're asking you.
Yes, very important. Yes.
Yeah. So I learned all that. And excellent customer service. That's what I learned at WIS, which I used later on in my other work and very successfully.
Yes, and you said before that you there was never a question asked that you didn't find an answer for. Is that the way it went? Yes.
Well, not dismissing it. We may not eventually find an answer, but we would turn every stone to make sure that if we said there is nothing we can do about this situation, there was nothing in South Australia.
So you left no stone unturned to get an answer if you could.
That's right.
Right. Do you think there is still a need for an information service for women?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because as much as the world has moved on, there are still lots of pockets in our society, in our community, where people are isolated. They have no one to go to. We have lots of new groups moving in, and they come from backgrounds that they didn't have any of the information that we have here, or women were not in the public arena. They may come from isolated areas, from villages where they had nothing. So we've got a lot of new arrivals, refugees or new groups of people. So the Women's Information Service is a much needed service, because unfortunately domestic violence also hasn't stopped despite our world being advanced technologically so much. People still, relationships is the area where we're still quite behind. And that's why I think Women's Information is very, very much
still
needed.
Relevant. Yes.
Absolutely, yes. Relevant, yes. It may be the way we provide it differently, but it's still needed. Yes.
Right, WIS has collaborated with numerous government, women's and community groups to provide programs that assist women. For example, legal advice with Women's Legal Service, Women's Financial Advice Service, Modern Banking for Older Women, Tax Help. Were you involved in organising or participating in these programs or any other programs like that?
Yes, we had the legal advice, which was on a Tuesday night and Saturday morning. And obviously as a worker, I was there to assist. I didn't do any of the legal information, obviously, but we were working alongside the legal aid and financial advice, I think we had as well. I can't remember when that was. At the time that I was working at WIS, the office was open from 9 o'clock in the morning until 9 at night.
That's long hours.
But we had two shifts.
Five days a week?
Yes, and Saturday morning, because of the legal information sessions as well.
That was a very good service.
It was excellent, excellent.
During the 1980s, WIS held several phone-ins on women's issues, such as domestic violence, women and housing, parental stress and women and disability. Did any of these phone-ins happen after you started at WIS, or do you know the outcome of any of them?
No. I can't remember, you know, if we had some. I'm pretty sure we would have had a phone-in, but I cannot recall, unfortunately.
No.
Topics. Yeah, all I remember is that we had loads and loads of training sessions with psychologists, psychiatrists, all sorts of professionals would come. Social Security, you know how today is not called Social Security, but in those days, Social Security changed every 5 minutes, one of their rulings or one of their regulations. So we had lots of liaison with those offices, but I don't recall anything specific.
No, I think the phone-ins happened before you started, yeah. What do you know about the WIS support group and the role it played over many years?
I can't say I know a lot about it, I must admit. So it's I'm aware that there was, but I cannot remember specifics. And it could be because I was very new and green in the area and I concentrated on the task at hand, you know, what I needed.
Yes.
But we did have, I don't know why I don't remember much about the WIS support group.
No, that probably wasn't terribly relevant to what you were actually doing.
It's because they met after hours. I wasn't involved as well.
Did you know who the women's advisor or director of the Office for the Status of Women were?
Yes, I did at the time, yes.
Do you remember who they? You can't remember now. And how did your time at WIS influence or lead you to your next career move?
My time at WIS provided me with a wealth of knowledge and understanding. My move from WIS was to Working Women's Centre for 6 months, and then I didn't want to continue there. One of the things that affected me adversely was that I found it too much to listen to women relating to me their sexual harassment cases. I personally, and this is just a very personal thing, I felt that they needed to say it, but it was too lengthy. I had moved on from wanting to talk about something that troubles me to briefly mention it and move on to what do I do to move on, to get to my next, to become more assertive. And so it was not the right mix between me and the job. And I'm not being critical of the women that felt they had to sit there and talk to you for an hour about the minute details of the sexual harassment. I just wasn't at that place anymore. I was somewhere else. So I wanted to come back to WIS, but the then director of advisor for the Office of Women said, no, you have to come up to the office. I spent a brief time up there. It wasn't a very happy time. And then I moved on and I got a job at Workplace Services, Industrial Affairs, whatever you want to call it, for a year. Then I resigned because my husband was writing for Lonely Planet Travel Guides, traveling the world, and I wasn't going to be stuck here working. So I resigned. He came back from Israel and I said, guess what, honey? I've resigned and I'm coming with you.
That sounds a very good idea.
Yes, and I did that until from 98 to 2004. Oh, and then I went back into the public service.
That sounds a wonderful lifestyle. Finally, is there anything you would like to add to what you have already said?
No, I'd be very pleased to see a really good outcome of this.
Right.
Nothing
thank,
more.
Thank you for taking part in this interview.
Thank you for inviting me.